Hi, everybody. I'm Beattie Cohn-Vredos, and welcome, welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beattie Show. And for those of you who are tuning in for the very first time, in fact, this morning I was out on the tennis courts and I was trying to remember how many years that it's been since I've actually been doing the Ask Beattie Show right here on the Progressive Radio Network. And by my calculations, and I'm not the best math wizard, it is going on to almost 8 years. And I love doing the show every single week. I love hearing from you, your emails, your texts. And as most of you probably know, I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist. I'm also the author of the book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And believe me, I wish I had had this book in particular when I was beginning my own relationship life in the late 80s. I did research with 450 people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut area. And I actually devised a 10-step formula, which for me, I'm a very bottom line person, and this formula has already successfully been used by thousands of people around the world. And what the formula does, my friends, is that it teaches us exactly how to assess who is right for us and who is wrong for us before committing to any serious relationship. And my formula, you know, many people said, but it's not romantic and it's not sexy. But I'll tell you one thing, it educates, empowers, and above all, it keeps us safe. So that if you are someone who has been in and out of relationships and you oftentimes feel that you are on a relationship roller coaster ride and don't know why, this book will help you actually stay on track. And the reality is that with this research, it actually found that it takes about a year, not a week, not 2 weeks, not 2 months, not 3 months to find out who somebody really is and who they are not. And unfortunately, you cannot fast forward the process. Now, obviously, if you're seeing a lot of red flags early on, you are not going to stay into a relationship that is self-destructive, that is self-sabotaging, and that is not in your best interest. So I'm also a columnist. I've been writing Ask Beattie advice columns for many, many years for many publications. I'm a national speaker. I actually go around the country giving workshops, how to never make a mistake in love again. And I'm a national radio and television expert guest, and of course, the host of the Ask Beattie Show. And I have a private practice here in beautiful, beautiful New York City and also in East Hampton. So what is the Ask Beattie Show really all about? Well, it is about empowerment. We talk about all of the things that we can do to improve the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships. So we talk about mental health issues and sexuality and relationships and how and what we need to do. And of course, the key word is do, to maximize our physical and our emotional well-being. And of course, my mantra is that we need to all acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can the things that are getting in the way of our lives and of our relationships. And I'm really hoping that I have convinced you over the years that we do not need to navigate this journey on our own. It is way, way too difficult. And that reaching out to family, that is functional family and friends, and if need be professionals, it can make our life journey easier and less isolated, alienated, and lonely. Because if we're looking at the reality, some of the mental health realities of what's going on in this country, I mean, there are 350 million people worldwide that are suffering from clinical depression, 17 million adults in the United States, and Americans suffer from depression, American adults, 7.1%, women, 8.7%. And if we're looking at anxiety disorders, there are approximately 40 million Americans who are suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders, including panic attacks. And what about the area of domestic violence? Well, these numbers, they're really, really frightening. Four women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. So we have to be so, so careful who we allow into our lives. And if we're looking at suicide statistics, according to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, you may not know that suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States for all ages. And every single day, 130 Americans die by suicide. And another really frightening and upsetting statistic is that suicide is the fourth leading cause of death of adults ages 18 to 65. And this statistic may surprise you, but the highest increase in suicide is with males, with men 50 years of age and over. Suicide rates for females are highest among those ages 45 to 54. But the reality is whether or not we are suffering from clinical depression or anxiety disorders, if we are feeling suicidal, the very, very best thing that we can do is reach out and ask for help before things become just way too difficult to navigate on our own. And when we're looking at the world of relationships, you know, I talk about this all the time because I give Never Make a Mistake in Love Again workshops in the United States and also in Canada. Of course, those of you know, I am Canadian and I did my graduate and postgraduate work at McGill. But the fact is that we are doing very, very badly in the world of relationships, even though we have all of these self-help books and movies and therapists and life coaches. And yet the statistics tell us that we are really missing the boat. Now, for example, if we're looking at divorce, the divorce rate for first marriages is 48%. For second marriages, that number goes up. And a lot of people are really surprised to hear that. But 67% of couples marrying for the second time end up in the divorce courts. And for third marriages, and this is a number that really, really does surprise a lot of people, that statistic is 74%. So we don't seem to be getting wiser the more often we are married. And if we're looking at, for example, teenage dating violence, you know, when I think when I was growing up in Winnipeg, I mean, violence, teenage dating violence, I don't think so. I know that these things were never talked about, but I would doubt very, very much if teenage dating violence, you know, had been an issue when I was growing up and when I was in high school. But listen to these statistics. Nearly 1 in 11 females and approximately 1 in 14 male high school students report having experienced physical dating violence in the last year. And that translates into 1 in 8 females. And 1 in 3 girls in the United States is a victim of physical, emotional, or verbal abuse from a dating partner. And only 33% of teens who were actually in abusive relationships ever told anyone about the abuse. Of course, there is shame and there is self-blame. And when parents were asked about this issue, 81% of parents believe that teenage dating violence is a non-issue, that it is not an issue. So clearly we have a lot to learn about relationships. And of course, I've been saying this for years and years and years about the importance of relationship education. It should be beginning in the elementary school, throughout high schools, and also throughout colleges, because, you know, again, I don't think there's ever been as many self-help books that have been published. And yet, what is it that is really going on? Well, I have identified the three things that we all need to do, again, not to think about, not to complain about, but to do if we ever hope to find and maintain a healthy relationship with anyone. And I want you to really, really take this in. You know, I talk about this, you know, on my shows. I talk about this in my presentations. I talk about this ad nauseum with my patients in my private practice here in New York and also in East Hampton, because I would say over 80% of the people who contact me are contacting me because of relationships. Issues, specifically very dysfunctional relationship issues. So listen to the three things that I have discovered over a 35-year period of practicing as a psychotherapist and sex therapist. Number one, and this is probably the most important thing that we all need to really, really believe in, that we really need to do something about. Number one is that each of us needs to be in a really good place ourselves, emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. Now, listen, we all have unfinished business, and we all have what I call skeletons in our closet, including abuse of various different kinds. I see a lot of people who were sexually abused as children. And the fact is that even though we may have grown up in dysfunctional, abusive homes, we can't change what happened or what didn't happen. But what we can do is we can work with a really qualified professional. And believe me, all therapists are clearly not the same. So you have to do your due diligence. And if you have the unfinished business and skeletons in the closet that's, you know, so many of us have, to find a competent therapist who's going to be able to really help you to emotionally and psychologically work through the trauma that you sustained early on. And I really wish I could say that behavioral therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy, that would be sufficient, that we don't need to go back, that we don't need to revisit our past and the pain and all of the things that really got in the way. And for so many people that I see and that I've seen over the years, right from the beginning of their lives. But what I have found is that there is not a shortcut, and that even though it's true, we can't change anything at all that happened. I mean, after all, we can't change anything that happened 30 seconds ago. There is a way, there is really a great way clinically to help you to go on that kind of an emotional journey. And when you go through it, no, it is not like going to a tea party. It is painful. It is tough. But when you go through this process once and for all, you are then able to finally, and maybe for the first time in your life, to be able to live in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And you have clarity. You have clarity about your life. You have clarity about what happened. You have clarity about your present. You have clarity about your behavior, the people who you choose to have in your life, so that you're not going to repeat, hopefully, the abusive relationships that you may have, unfortunately been subjected to in your own family or in other relationships that you may have had. So there is not a shortcut, so that if life is not going well and your relationships are not going well, and that you're just hoping that if you found the one, if you found the right woman or you found the right man, that that was going to take care of all of your problems and all of your skeletons in the closet. I wish that it were true, but that is a fallacy. So the first thing is that we have to be serious, and we have to take real responsibility of taking care of our own issues, so that we are going to feel empowered. Because I remember I used to tell my daughter Jordana, when she was a little girl, and we were always talking about relationships, and that was one of the occupational hazards of having a mom, you know, who was on the radio and who was on television constantly talking about relationships. And I used to say to her all the time, Jordana, the relationship needs to be the icing on the cake, and we need to be the cake. We need to be solid. So that's number one. And number two, it's an educational process. We all need to learn the actual ingredients that go into a successful relationship. And I must tell you, I treat some of the smartest and loveliest and most accomplished men and women. And if I were to give them a test, and of course I always do, they would not know. They would not know because they did not learn. They did not have the relationship education that most of us, unfortunately, never had. And are unaware of the ingredients that need to go into a successful relationship. So that's number two. And number three is my book and my formula, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And if you go through this process, you are going to really not only feel, but you are going to be empowered, and you are going to be able to keep yourself safe as you navigate the challenges of life and of relationships. And there are a number of other little tips that I want to remind you about. And of course, I remind you every single week about things that we need to do to take care of our physical health. And of course, our physical health impacts our mental health, and our mental health impacts our physical health. And of course, the importance, and we hear this from Gary Null every single day, the importance of eating healthily, and of course, interacting and socializing. Loneliness and alienation can be a killer. And as many of you may know, that people in Sardinia happen to live the longest, and they eat healthily, and they interact, and they socialize, and they sleep 8 hours a night, and they take naps, and they are living the longest of anyone in the world. And of course, the importance of exercise and weight training and yoga. It does amazing things, not only to our body, to tone our bodies, but it also tones our minds. And it also helps to increase our serotonin levels, which of course affects our mood. And of course, having supportive people in our life and eliminating toxins. And I know that when we talk about toxins, we typically talk about chemicals. And when I talk about toxins, I mostly talk about toxic people. and the importance of eliminating toxic people in our lives. And that sometimes means friends and family. So my mantra in my own personal life is zero toxicity, zero chemical toxicity, and zero people toxicity. You know, other things that can really help us is positive visualization, of course, dancing and listening to music and herbal teas. And I've also found, you know, that helping others and giving back, it gives us so much. And I've oftentimes, you know, thought about this over the years. You know, I've helped thousands and thousands of people. But in the helping, I have gotten so much back. I think that I'm a much, much better human being for having, you know, met people who I normally would have never, ever met or interacted with in my own personal life. You know, another great thing to combat loneliness and to give back is getting a dog. Great company, great way to meet people. Here in New York City, Jim and I, we live on the Upper West Side. And I think every other person, I mean, I'm really overstating it, seems to have a dog. And it's a great way. It's a great way to receive unconditional love every single day. And it's also a really, really great way to meet people. So again, there are a lot of things that we can do. And if you find that you have tried all of these things and yet there are still some blocks and that life is not going in the way that you would like, again, it is a good thing. It is not a weakness. It is a strength to give yourself permission and reach out and ask for help. Well, I have a guest, and I'm really, really excited about my guest today. Her name is Robin Lieberman, and Robin is a native New Yorker, born in Brooklyn, New York. She began her career as a school counselor in her early 20s and has been serving and working with students in the public school system for more than 35 years. And while fulfilling a career in education, she nurtured her writing through memoirs and poetry. And Ms. Lieberman carries life experience through her marriage, divorce, long-term relationships, and midlife dating. And apparently, and I can't wait to meet Robin, she is a sounding board for her female friends and acquaintances who share their personal relationship challenges, which has given her the impetus to publish her book, which has just come out, Searching for September. And that book, Searching for September, was published by the Three Tomatoes Book Publishing. And in her novel, that one woman's struggle in an emotionally abusive relationship. And I am so excited and I am so pleased, Robin, to have you on the Ask Beanie Show. Welcome, welcome.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you so much for that great introduction. I am thrilled to be on your show. I am a person who has always loved writing and storytelling. And as we both are aware, there can never be too much discussion when it comes to relationships. Every relationship seems to take on its own form. And we all have our own personal experiences that can relate to my character, September Webb, who is in the book Searching for September.
Well, you know, you made a statement that I absolutely loved, and I think that people should hear this, and we should all take it in. And this was your statement, that there is a fire in all of us. We own it, control it, and must protect it from others who try to diminish it. And what a powerful and true statement that is, Robin.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And, you know, I believe that having my own set of experiences, but most importantly, being in the counseling field and listening to the stories of so many females, I felt a great need to develop this character to portray a woman who finds herself in an emotionally abusive relationship. And even though September is a middle-aged woman, her experience can certainly resonate to so many women of so many ages.
Absolutely. You know, I was curious because I read the book. I love the book. Everybody should definitely buy the book. You can get it on Amazon. I was really curious, Robin, why you decided at this point to write Searching for September. Like, why now?
You know, first of all, I have to say that probably one of my biggest inspirations for the book is that I still have parents who are alive. They have been married for 64 years. Happily married for 64 years. They have been a very great inspiration. And I feel in so many ways that they've led by example. And things look so different in this day and age, especially when we talk about women who find themselves in abusive relationships, whether it's physical, whether it's emotional. But what's so very important, and I have a daughter as well, it is so very important to lead by example and to try to make yourself as healthy as you can possibly be, so you can lead them in that right direction. But also as a counselor, I've always had a passion since I'm a kid to help others work through their issues. And it's exactly what you said about being that sounding board for friends. So that's, and I love to write, and I have a very creative mind. And I really feel like this book came at a good time. Being married, having been married and divorced and in long-term relationships and being out there in midlife dating, everything just looks so very different.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. And we actually have a caller, and I just we will talk to Allison from California in just one second. You know, I think, Robin, it is all about, you know, lessons to be learned. You know, if you were listening to my opening remarks about divorce, I mean, it's really very depressing that we go from a 48% divorce rate for first marriages, a 67% divorce rate for second, you know, 73% for third. So, I mean, we are really missing the boat, at least in the United States. And, you know, I hope that through programs like mine and books like yours, that we are educating and empowering people. And then somehow that there is a takeaway that people are actually learning something so that they're not going to continue to repeat history. But let's hear from Allison from California. Welcome, Allison, to the Ask Beattie Show with Beattie Cohen, Brettos, and Robin. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited that you took my call.
Absolutely. This is a call-in counseling show. And we're always happy, always, always happy to hear from listeners. So do you have a comment? Do you have a question for either myself or Robin?
Yes, actually. I have a question for Robin. And I just want to say I love your show. And every year, my girlfriends and I look for a really good, juicy book for our summer book club. And lo and behold, we found Searching for September. And it was a page turner, and we all got together last night and had our book club meeting. So it's so great that I'm on the show now talking, and I hope my friends are listening too. But one of the questions that came up and really was a hot discussion last night was, why did September stay in this abusive relationship as long as she did? We all had different answers, so I'm so curious to hear from the author.
Okay, Robin, why don't you start, and then I will give the psychotherapeutic interpretation that I have certainly come upon over the last 35 years, because I would say that the majority of women in particular that I see and that I've seen over all of these years have actually found themselves in very dysfunctional and very abusive, either physically or emotionally or psychologically abusive relationships. So I have a lot to say about that. But Robin, why don't you just respond first of all to Allison's question. Why are women staying in these kinds of dysfunctional, abusive relationships? What have you found?
Okay, well, I know we don't have 10 hours to discuss this, but in speaking specifically about September had a fantasy. September viewed marriage and romance very, very idealistically. And I think that in her pursuit to try to find that, balance, to try to find that passion was so important to her. And, you know, on paper, in the book, she married, she looked good on, they both look good on paper, but there was a fire missing in her. And she really needed to pursue that because she couldn't open her door, front door 10 years later and still feeling very hollow inside. So she was looking for that. And, you know, through all the online dating and people not matching up, she finally meets the man who in the beginning really presented it all to her, both passionately, physically, emotionally. But what she did not realize while she was this is that she was dealing with a narcissist. And that's a whole different creature because narcissists are very much like that, where they draw you in, where they become your person. And then all of a sudden, and BD, I want to also go back to something that you mentioned about how it really takes about a year to get to know somebody and to maybe start to see some of those red flags. So when you have a person like Seppi who's in a relationship and the relationship in the very beginning is thriving, it's hot, it's romantic, he hits up all points with you. And then all of a sudden, they've reeled you in and now all of a sudden have taken a little bit of a turn. It threw her off balance. But she really felt that perhaps he will eventually come around to be the person who she had first met. And I think the reason why she stayed in that relationship is because she had this idea of fulfilling a fantasy.
Mm-hmm. You know, let me just say something too, is that we really have to be in a really solid place ourselves. And that means emotionally and psychologically, and that the relationship really does need to be the icing on the cake. We do need to be the cake. We do need to be solid. We do need to know who we are. We do need to want a relationship, but that we're not going into a relationship to be saved or because we're depressed or needy or anxious and we're hoping that the Prince Charming, you know, person who we are hoping to meet is going to save us and make our lives better. So I guess my question to you, Robin, CP, was she in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically when she decided, you know, in your words, to take the plunge into the sea of single men and the culture of midlife dating, which had frustrated and disillusioned her previously? What was her mental state? Was she in a good place?
You know what? She was really you know, she was coming from a lifeless marriage in a lot of respects, and really missing and really looking for that passion. And the other thing that you had mentioned, which is really so very important, is the self-esteem and the empowerment.
Right.
And you know, I always say it is so very important to heal from broken relationships and find that balance. Now, it's whether you're coming out of a marriage, you're coming out of a long or a short-term relationship that is not working for you, that is not satisfying to you. And I have to say that sometimes the feeling of being alone is sometimes greater than the feeling of being with the wrong partner. But it's,
absolutely, it is, absolutely. But again, was she, you know, I mean, as the writer, do you think that she was in a good place and that she had worked through her disappointment and her disillusionment and perhaps other relationships and the marriage that didn't work out? Was she emotionally pretty solid? Because in all of my work, I wish that did not have to be the case. I wish that we could just meet someone and the person would sweep us off our feet and we could just, you know, walk into the fairy tale land of passion and love and that everything is going to be okay. But it doesn't work like that in the real world. So was she in a good place emotionally, would you say?
I mean, I would say that she was in a, you know, in a pretty good, I think pretty much she knew what she was looking for. You know, she had gone through a lot of dates. She was looking for a man who could be taken at face value, who is a good, honest person, a good human being. She also needed to be able to have that physical passion. She wasn't finding a lot of those things with the people who she was out there dating. The unfortunate part of all of this is that she found the fire and what she thought was honesty and goodness. She
right.
found it in a narcissist. And you know what? I think no matter, you know, how smart a person is, that's what narcissists do. That's what they do for a living.
Let me just say, Robin, you know, because I have this discussion with my patients all the time, you know, whether or not somebody, and it's an interesting discussion, and feel free, Allison, to, you know, to comment on any of what
Thank
Robin
you.
And I are saying. But, you know, what I have found is that whether somebody is a narcissist or whether somebody is an alcoholic or whether somebody is clinically depressed, it's how are we going to engage or not engage, you know, in a relationship that is dysfunctional and that is not in our best interest, you know, because before I did my work and my research and my book, I think I used to be an incredibly spontaneous person, and I would meet somebody and I would say, oh, I met this lovely woman, or I met this really, really nice guy. I would never, ever make that kind of a comment today. The comment that I have learned, and I made my own mistakes certainly along the journey of relationships, is that I met somebody who appears to be trustworthy. He appears to be great. He appears, or she appears, you know, to be wonderful and honest and reliable and trustworthy. And again, the research, and I wished that the research had found a different result, because in my personal life, I'm probably one of the most impatient people you're ever going to find. Professionally, of course, that's a different story. about, you know, when the research found that it actually takes about a year to find out who somebody, you know, is and isn't, it caused me and it caused readers, it caused, well, everybody that I talked to, you know, it caused us to really pause, and the need for all of us to slow down the process. And in that way, you know, it forces us to keep our eyes and our ears, you know, really wide open, and to be aware and to acknowledge the reality of what it is that's going on and not going on in our particular relationships.
Yeah. You know, and I think that it, one of the most important things is to be your authentic self. And the other thing is that, you know, it's a challenge sometimes for women to really take the time to heal, take a step back from a broken relationship, to really contemplate why that relationship failed.
Right.
And it's painful sometimes to separate from what one has become accustomed to. Like,
exactly.
It's like a part of you is missing, whether the relationship was healthy or not. But the most important thing is to figure out what you, Y-O-U, what you need, and break free from any patterns of behavior that may have been destructive. Because when you reach that pinnacle of being comfortable with yourself and you find that self-appreciation, you're in the best position to really love again.
No, exactly. And when we start to see the red flags, and it's really incumbent upon us to recognize red flags, to know what's okay, to know what's not okay, to trust our instincts, to trust that little voice inside of us that's saying to us, something is really off here, something is really wrong. And then to be able to confront, and not necessarily in an aggressive way, and say to this person, I don't like the way you're talking to me. I feel really uncomfortable with what just happened tonight or this morning. And again, it's incumbent upon us to deal with situations when things are progressing in a way that are not in our best interest, and that, you know, really is turning into a very self-destructive, self-sabotaging and destructive kind of a situation. Allison, do you have any comments?
Well, yes. I mean, this was the talk last night, and we were all trying to figure out Seppi's reason for staying and motives, and then we began to analyze our own relationships. So this book was not only an incredible, incredible story that I couldn't put down. I mean, I would find myself at 2:00 in the morning waking up to turn the page to find out what happened next to Seppi. But also, personally, we all spoke about it. And when you said just a little while ago to Robin that how strong was she emotionally ready, we talked about that last night. And one of the things we said was, we're all works in progress. So we all have to realize, you know, where we're at and how much we can take. We all had different reasons or different explanations for why Seppi did what she did, and or didn't react when we thought she should have. But I think it is a matter of what Robin said, to try to take and accept only what you're willing to take. And I just can't wait to read if there'll ever be another book. I'm looking forward to reading it. But it really, the whole book opened up a series of discussions for us in terms of our own relationships with our families, with our spouses, with our children, with our coworkers. And it's really incredible to hear what you're saying, because it all makes so much sense.
Well, you know, the thing too is, you know, and both of you are saying this, that we, you know, each of us has to be very clear about what it is that we want and need in a relationship and what it is that we don't want and need in our relationships. And as the relationship is unfolding, we also need to be very pragmatic and realistic, and it's sometimes really hard to be, but to describe the reality of what it is that's going on in our relationship. And of course, the perfect relationship doesn't exist. And we need to be very clear on what kinds of compromises we are willing to make, what things are absolutely not compromisable under any circumstances, such as being with a narcissism, abuse of any kind, emotional abuse, verbal abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse. So again, it really comes down to us, don't you think, that we need to have the kind of clarity about ourselves, about the reality of the relationship and what is working and what is not working, and not continuing on and enabling a relationship that is dysfunctional, abusive in whatever way abusive is, you know, to us, and that is not in our best interest. So, you know, it does in many, many ways, it falls on our own shoulders, I believe.
Yeah, and it's also very easy to want to turn those red flags into green flags and not address, Zeedee, what you're saying, and not address the concerns. You know, many times, in order to try to make a relationship work or stay in a relationship, we want to use words that impress to keep that relationship going, but the relationship will not grow at that point. And the other thing, I always say is, you have to try to get comfortable with stepping out on that ledge, no matter how uncomfortable you think that might be, because you can ask a question to your partner that's not going to elicit a favorable response. And again, that risk putting a dagger into your dream. But the truth is that you are prolonging the inevitable, because your authentic self, you have to be authentic from the beginning, because those true feelings are going to seep out. And these are conversations that will either make or break the relationship, but maybe not cost you years and years and years of heartache when you realize that there is no resolution. And you know, lastly, I would just say that all relationship gardens need their tending. And what Allison said, all works in progress. But if the relationship is not moving in a direction where there is cohesiveness between two people, you cannot fit that square peg in the round hole, and you will never be right for the wrong person.
Well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, and the other thing I think that we all have to acknowledge is that we can't change anybody at all. The only person that we can change is ourselves. So if people are going into relationships and you're hoping, well, oh, if I love him enough, or if we have more sex, or if we travel, or if we, you know, play more tennis, that somehow I'm going to be able to change him, or I'm going to be able to change her. It never, ever, ever happens. You know, we need to be the ones that need to navigate, you know, changes within ourselves. But if we are hoping, you know, I see this right now. I think every single woman that is in therapy with me right now is involved in an extraordinarily dysfunctional relationship. And each and every woman, you know, what they said was, well, if I loved him enough, you know, he would treat me better. Our communication would be better. We would be able to solve problems better. And none of that is true. None of that is true at all. And again, it's about our feeling confident in our own skin, and having enough confidence and self-esteem in ourselves to be able to say to somebody, whether it's a lover or a boss or a family friend or an associate, you know what? You cannot cross over this line with me. I will not tolerate the way you're behaving. I will not tolerate the way you are speaking to me. And then you're able to see, what is this person going to do? How is this person going to respond? And if they're not willing to sit down and look within themselves, and if there isn't a strong enough commitment to you and to the relationship, the very best thing that we can always do is walk away. I mean, I see women who have been in these kinds of relationships for 25 and 35 years, hoping and dreaming and wishing and fantasizing that somehow they're going to be able to change their partner. And it never, ever happens.
Right. And a very important word, I think, in all this that we didn't talk about is perspective. And it's so very important to not lose perspective. Your guy, the right guy, will allow a relationship to unfold organically and respectfully and naturally. And if you being your authentic self ushers him away, well, then he's not your guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, without giving the details of your book away, did Seppi, did she learn something? Were there lessons to be learned that may have been a takeaway for her?
Yeah, you know what? There were definitely lessons for her to be learned. And she had a great amount of trust for this man. She did sweep a lot of things under the rug. But at one point in the book, it was so blatant how he had lied for so long. And Allison had mentioned something about, oh, is there another book? Yes, the sequel is being written. You know, right now I'm involved in writing that. And it's so very important for people to be able to read this first book. And then there, you know, obviously there is a lot that will come out in the sequel and other questions. Just, you know, people who I know who have already read the book want more. They want to know more about some of the characters. And so a lot of that is coming in the sequel.
It sounds very, very exciting. And, you know, you made some comments that I think everybody should really, you know, hear and take in. And one is, own what you need in a relationship and don't settle. Be your authentic self. The other one that I loved, Robin, was, you will never be right for the wrong person. And the wrong person, by the way, will never be right for you. And that men will treat you by what we allow. Well, not only men. I mean, if we allow our parents, our friends, our associates, our colleagues, our children to treat us badly, you know, it's on us. I mean, we need to stop enabling people to hurt us and disrespect us. So, I mean, we have to take responsibility for how people treat us. And there are a lot of, you know, lessons to be learned in all of this. And, you know, what's so, I guess, disconcerting to me is that with all the relationship education talk, you know, in the media, we're not seeing positive changes when it comes to divorce, when it comes to abuse, when it comes to domestic violence, when it comes to extramarital affairs. So somewhere along the line, we need more books like yours, Robin. Mm-hmm. And we need more of this kind of conversation.
Yeah, and there are just so many situations which, you know, and you have women who come from abusive families where they sometimes see parents who were abused by each other. And that's a whole other conversation with trying to break a cycle. And
right,
it just shows itself in so many, you know that, it shows itself in so many different ways.
Right. Which again, you know, it comes back to, I think, one of my initial points is that each of us needs to be in a good place emotionally, psychologically, psychiatrically, work through as best as we can our own demons and our own unfinished business and our own skeletons in the closet, so that the relationship will add something to our lives and not diminish our lives, and not ever allow anybody to diminish us in any ways at all. So that we need to have the self-esteem, we need to have clarity about what's going on, what's not going on, what's positive, what's negative, and take whatever steps that we need to take to make sure that we never make a mistake in love again.
Exactly.
Allison, thank you for calling us from California. And Robin, I really am looking forward to meeting you when you get back to New York. And the book, Searching for September, great book. So people can get it on Amazon, right?
Yes, it's available on Amazon. They can also get it in bookstores.
Excellent. Well, listen, Robin Lieberman, thank you so much for this very, very important conversation. And the book, love the book. Everybody, you should go to Amazon and read Searching for September, and looking forward to meeting you soon, Robin. Take care.
Thank you. And thank you so much, Allison, for calling in. And Beattie, thank you so very much for having me on your show. I greatly appreciate that.
It was a pleasure, an absolute pleasure. Well, again, everybody, I'm looking at the clock. It's 3:54, and now hour has really almost come and gone yet again on the Ask Beattie Show. This is a really important conversation. It concerns me so much as a psychotherapist, as a wife, as a mother, what is going on in the world of relationships, and how careful we have to be who we allow into our lives. And we can never have enough of relationship education, whether it means reading books like Robin's Searching for September or my book, which is a much more clinical book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. Because in this crazy world of ours, we really do need to educate ourselves and empower ourselves with as much really relationship education that we can find, because the bottom line is our safety and our security, not only our physical safety and security, but our emotional and mental and psychological well-being really, really depends on our knowledge and our clarity about who we should and who we should not allow into our lives. So again, I hope that this has been informative and educational, and that you will, you know, really take this conversation in, because it can really make all the difference in the world, in your life, and in your relationships moving forward. So again, everybody, it's amazing how an hour does come and go here on the Ask Beattie Show. And of course, I love hearing from you. So continue to send me emails, and you can also, of course, leave voicemails on my cell phone, and you can contact me through the Progressive Radio Network. But I leave you with my two weekly messages. And of course, the first message, which is really apropos, especially with today's conversation, is that we need to do everything possible, everything that we can possibly do to make sure that we love ourselves and that we are living our lives in ways that are truly in our best interest. And of course, secondly, we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to accept and in learning to love each other. So I look forward to talking with you next Monday, and every Monday live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Progressive Radio Network. So have a good rest of the day and a good rest of the week. And remember to take good care of yourself, and think about it, because this is what I ask my patients to do after every single session, to think about as they navigate their days and they navigate their weeks, to be living their lives in ways that are truly, truly in ways that are in our best interest. So goodbye, everybody. I will talk with you next week, and take good care. Bye-bye.